Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Well, it's a fun day on the Chuck Oliver Show. It's a Wednesday, so you know the info is going to be there from Chris Landry. Just talk to Chris, bottom of hour one. That's every Wednesday, all the way up to the top of the hour. So I appreciate Chris joining us each Wednesday. Coming up in 10, Kelly Quinlan, JacketsOnline.com, Georgia Tech, where the program is now as they have hit their offseason. And then Will Vandervoort talking a little Clemson, staying in the ACC, switching over the Atlantic. As Justin Ross is not transferring, and Clemson is likely to represent their division in Charlotte yet again, because that's just kind of what it is right now. So that's the conversation coming up as we move through the rest of this hour. But right now, we'll get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football, every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm pain relief cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Headline, Tennessee season opener moved to September 2nd. Well, what's the relation? Where was it? It was September 4th, which is the first full Saturday of college football season as scheduled. Tennessee season open. I mentioned Bowling. Did I say Bowling Green for Auburn just now? I think I did. Tennessee's playing Bowling Green to open the season. It was scheduled for Saturday the 4th. It's moved up to September 2nd. Auburn opens with Alabama State and I think Akron, and then it's Penn State. So they don't play Bowling Green. Tennessee's got them. And it was a Saturday game. All right, now it's going to be a Thursday game. Tough story, and a guy that you know, we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. Headline, ex-Hawaii record-setting quarterback Colt Brennan dead at 37. He's a Heisman finalist. Finished in the Heisman top 10 twice in 2007. He was a finalist. He was there in New York. Colt Brennan, former University of Hawaii quarterback. I think it started out at Colorado, had an indiscretion. Accusations of some sort of malfeasance, and I can't recall what it was, but he had to get gone from Colorado, lands at Hawaii. 2007, they go 12-0. And if you look at the schedule, you still won all your games. It was attainable. If you were a good team and had some NFL players and were squared away and motivated and good coaching, and with June Jones, Colt Brennan, and who was it, Devon Bess was one of their receivers, wound up playing for the Dolphins. They had a couple of guys. They had actually a few guys played in the NFL, but then they played their first team that could fog a mirror, and that was the Georgia Bulldogs, and they just took apart Hawaii. But they got their shot, and in sports, you want your shot. They were 12-0. They got to play in the Sugar Bowl in a New Year's Six Bowl against a big-time program, and they lost. But then Colt Brennan had a chance with the Redskins, bounced around, tried a couple of other leagues, was in a car wreck a few years ago, and that's his father has spoken out now that the result of a car wreck and some prescription medication and other drugs that he were either addicted to or using, it's not a pretty picture. And so his father, I'll give him credit, though. His dad talked to ESPN and kind of laid it all out there and said a lot of drugs, a lot of bad decisions, and this is kind of where it winds up. Paramedics were called to a hotel room in Newport Beach, California, where Colt Brennan had been with a few other people. His father said he ingested something laced with fentanyl and never regained consciousness. My goodness gracious. I bet if you Google Newport Beach, isn't that where, didn't Todd Marinovich get arrested there? Is that like a big heroin scene or something?
I think it's a really ritzy area.
Okay, exactly. I've never been to Newport Beach. Is it like asking if downtown Paris is where you score meth?
It's like where the Real Housewives of Orange County are.
Will you Google and see if Todd Marinovich was also arrested at Newport Beach? I somehow remember, like, if wayward quarterbacks looking to score, like, do they know go to Newport Beach? So he's passed, and I say this, I'm not trying to be funny. I mean, that's the kind of thing that it could be you, it could be me. It wound up being a guy who was a starting quarterback for an undefeated Division I team and a Heisman Trophy finalist. That guy. Drugs. Colt Brennan, dead at 37. All right, consider yourself up to date. We will take a break. Come back, continue with more of the Chuck Oliver Show. Now.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.
Next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Well, I tell you every single day, all week, all year, all college football. It's not college football right now. Not for about, I don't know, about 60 seconds with our next guest, because among all the craziness in the world of college football, it's happening in hoops as well. So I'm at least going to start there because I need some clarification myself. I want to welcome on now the publisher for Rivals of the Georgia Tech boutique site. It is jacketsonline.com, and it's fantastic. It is Kelly Quinlan. Kelly, brother, how are you today?
I'm good, Chuck. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you carving out some time and coming on. What in the world is up with the hoops portal? It seems like even a good team coming off a good year has five or six of their players in there. That's like half your scholarship roster. And it's not unusual for a team to have five or six in there. What's going on?
I think it's just there's a lot of people trying to find the best spot for them that feel like maybe they're not being used right or are not happy with, you know, a coach for some reason or whatever. A lot of it seems to be kind of chemistry-driven as well, like if there's issues with the coaching staff. And I think you've seen, like, some programs kind of fare a little bit better that have maybe better connections with their players. But, yeah, it's been pretty crazy to watch. Obviously, what's going on in Athens is pretty insane right now as well.
Has Georgia lost, is it nine kids?
It's something like that. It's like seven of their top eight players from last year are gone, like in the portal, and it's in the portal, not like going pro. So yeah, it's super weird, including like I think they're all conference freshmen. So yeah, it's staggering is the best way to describe it. And yeah, a lot of coaches are now kind of pivoting their approach to be like, hey, let me take X number of transfers a year and only a couple of high school kids because the transfers, once they're there, can't go anywhere else for a while, so you're safe. And you roll the dice on a couple of high school kids.
And you actually get somebody you've seen play college ball and have more knowledge of than just projecting. Even the best high school player in whatever sport, you're still projecting. I want to ask you quickly, what is the scholarship number? Like in football, you can take 25. And you mentioned Georgia, it's like seven of their top eight, and I think it's nine kids have jumped in the portal. How many can you replace?
So it's 13 scholarships. So, you know, I imagine they have a few guys left that didn't play or whatever. I don't know how you replace that. Like, yes, you can get kids in the portal, but, you know, if you're at Georgia, it's a little bit different than if you're like Kentucky or something, trying to get kids like, you know, at Kentucky, yeah, they could probably get a guy who can start there immediately. You know, at Georgia, are you going to get the same value you get for KD Johnson? I don't know. Like,
yeah.
So that's really fascinating to me as I kind of look at various teams and how they're navigating the portal. And you've seen Pitt's another team that's been really savaged by it.
Yeah.
They've lost half their team that way.
Continuing with Kelly Quinlan from JacketsOnline.com. We will talk college football now. Spring practice, it's been done about a month, and they had their games and all. What are Tech's goals right now? And I'm talking right now, what are the goals? Not like overall, we want to win a national championship. I know that. For 2021, what is immediately in front of Jeff Collins and Georgia Tech?
Going to a bowl game. You know, having a winning season, being in the hunt in the Coastal a little bit. At least, you know, maybe finishing in the top three in the Coastal. I think those things would be very welcome, and it would be a sign of progress because, let's be honest, the guys in front of him that had the job before him, even Chan, were very competitive in the Coastal, going to bowl games every year. Paul, obviously, was first or second most of his years at Tech in the Coastal. So I think that's where people want to see the next kind of step up. And then when you get into year four and year five, that's when you want to see them be able to compete with North Carolina and Miami and Clemson and whoever else in the ACC at the top end of it. But I think if you can get into the hunt and also avoid those, like, blowout games, like where you lose, you know, by three or four touchdowns to a team that shouldn't blow you out like Syracuse last year. Like, that's the stuff that will make fans a lot happier.
Same with Kelly Quinlan again, JacketsOnline.com. All right, who in the Coastal, in your opinion then, beyond Georgia Tech, who in the Coastal truly thinks about Charlotte? And I'm talking like before August practice starts. Who really thinks about beating Clemson?
I think North Carolina and Miami, the interesting thing with North Carolina is they lost so many weapons. How do they replace that? They just haven't had a defense since, you know, Butch Davis left there, probably. So I think they're one in Miami always has talent. It's interesting there. You know, they had all those guys drafted off their team, and it's like they're always probably the most talented team in the Coastal. They can never quite harness that. And the other team that's kind of interesting to me is Pitt, but they've lost a lot of guys on their defense. So I think those are the teams that are competitive. I think the two teams that have maybe the talent to compete with Clemson would be North Carolina and Miami. But again, I just think Clemson's at a different level right now from those teams. And even with what they've lost, they still have a really good team coming back.
It was even last year where they just lined everybody up. That made it easier, I guess, but for teams in the Atlantic, because you could still finish second to Clemson, but be in the conference title game. But we go back to divisions this year. Aren't you supposed to be mentioning Virginia Tech when I ask you that?
You know, it's funny is, you know, it seemed like Justin Fuente like kept his job basically because of budget issues in Virginia Tech more than anything else. You know, I've never seen something go so weird. And we were talking about basketball transfers earlier. They've had a ton of guys leave their football program at Virginia Tech, and it's just sort of been a big mess for him. And yeah, I don't know what's going on. I think right now they'd be picked to finish, you know, I think Duke will be picked to finish last, and Virginia Tech might be right behind them, you know, at that sixth spot or whatever it is. Like, they have just fallen completely off the map since Beamer retired, and it's sort of been just this downward trajectory there. And Fuente is sort of hanging by his teeth here, and they need to win this year if he wants to keep his job, I think. And that'll be a really interesting job if it comes open to, because that is a well set up program with a lot of fan support. It's sort of amazing how bad they've been the last few years.
I got used to about 15 years at least talking, and they never won a title and they played for it one time, but I got used to talking about Virginia Tech as, well, we need to be prudent and at least mention the Hokies, and you ain't got to mention them anymore. Wrapping up with Kelly Quinlan, you mentioned Paul when he first took over and he got Chan's roster. And they were playing like Derrick Morgan. I ain't seen a Derrick Morgan in Atlanta in a while. And it was his, wasn't it Paul's second year, wins the ACC, goes the Orange Bowl, right?
Yep.
I dare say that Paul's first or second team in Atlanta was the best 22 Paul ever had. After like going into what the 21 roster likely will look like, do you think Jeff Collins, it's the exact opposite. He did not inherit a roster with a bunch of Sunday guys. Do you think this is the best 22 Collins has had so far at Tech?
Oh, for sure. I think that they have guys that can be drafted, you know, left tackle Devin Cochran. You got defensive ends that are NFL-level guys now or physically are there. And, to me, you look at the roster, there's a lot of guys, and they've gotten older, and they have a lot of guys who are now in their third year in their system, too. So that's when you should start to see really a huge escalation. You give people a little bit of a pass for last year with everything that was going on. And, you know, as they talked about, you go into Saturday morning, and they'd wait to see who was clear to play because they wouldn't know. Like, they'd have to change on the fly. I remember one game they played Charlie Thomas at 205 pounds at defensive end because they had three defensive ends for the game. So, you know, it's going to be a lot more interesting to see now with a full roster and everyone available, like what this looks like and how they coach them up. And this is where you need to see like that next jump up for them too, because it is a roster now that's predominantly guys that Jeff brought in. So, you know, they've used the portal really well to kind of backfill spots. They've, you know, changed the roster out and got rid of guys that are don't fit anymore. A lot of those guys moved on their own. So it's like, this is the point where the sort of inflection point where you want to see winning, you know, to be honest with you, like go to a bowl game, be competitive every week. Like those are the things that will go a long way towards really selling his vision for the program and kicking them up to where they can be in a competitive spot in the Coastal every year and maybe start to get in a position to challenge Clemson some. I mean, that's still a little ways off, I think, but you know, they're a team that potentially could be positioned to be a real challenger to Clemson in a few years if they can keep building on what Jeff's trying to build there.
Last thing for you, Tech announced going 100% capacity at Bobby Dodd this fall. And the reality is, I mean, I know living here, Georgia, when they it's the visiting team that'll fill it up almost every time. Georgia, Notre Dame's done it, Clemson, FSU before. That's what it has to be. Against that backdrop, though, and we got about 2 minutes left, what's the money situation on the flats? Because Dan Radakovich, when he left, I've said there ain't an AD in America that had a different accounting ledger, a more different accounting ledger than D-Rad when he went from Tech to Clemson. What is Todd Stansberry dealing with in 2021 money-wise?
I think they're okay. They did this support the Swarm Fund thing where they raised a lot of money, several million dollars, to kind of backfill some of the losses from ticket sales and things like that. And I think they're okay right now. I think if they can sell football and basketball in the fall, they should be in a decent spot. They've sort of managed to bridge this gap with the COVID year and losing all those ticket sales with being able internal fundraising, essentially. And so I think they're okay. I mean, they've been, you know, very careful with how they've spent money too. So that's helped. And, you know, they've held off filling positions some at times and things like that. And they've had furloughs. I think they've done a nice job of kind of trying to manage the money as best they can.
Yeah, it's so tough, man, when you're in Georgia and Atlanta and you're having to compete against everybody who comes into your backyard. And it is very different budgets, no doubt about it. Kelly, appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
No problem, Chuck.
All right, Kelly Quinlan, again, jacketsonline.com. Yeah, you've got to, you know, he's talking about how's the money. He's like, well, you know, they raised some extra money to cover the shortfall from last year. Georgia Tech didn't corner the market on that. There are plenty of athletic departments that had to kind of, you know, call around and say, we got some bills coming due. You want to help out? We would either rather not go to the reserve fund if you have a reserve fund, and plenty of athletic departments, but not having a reserve fund, they run out of loss. Plenty of athletic departments run out of loss. Some of it is just fancy bookkeeping to make it look like that or whatever. But there are plenty of places where you look around and go, all right, money's tight. Georgia Tech has been one of those. And the ACC network, this is another – like, you don't have a choice. If you, in the case, the specific case of Georgia Tech, you're in Atlanta, you're in Georgia, you're going to have to compete against, even for three-star recruits, SEC programs, ACC programs, et cetera. Like, University of Georgia – they got drug dealer money coming in from the SEC network. ACC network? Still waiting for it to kind of come around to have full distribution, et cetera. And so even on the front of the boutique television network, ACC schools not catching up quite yet to the Southeastern Conference.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Justin Ross said he's not leaving. Dabo said Justin Ross isn't leaving. Chris Landry last hour said Justin Ross isn't leaving. Well, I'm going to ask our next guest if Justin Ross is leaving or not, because he's that kind of ball player. I want to welcome on now from the Clemson Insider, just a tremendous site we always love visiting. It is Will Vandervoor. Will, welcome, brother. How are you on this Wednesday?
I'm doing good, man, because, you know, we were the first site to report he wasn't leaving, so you know it's right.
So. Yes, the rumor got out there he was leaving, and then the Clemson Insider's like, yeah, no, not happening. So do you have any timeline how and I'm just something like this could happen. It's obviously this is the example with Justin Ross, but how does this unfold where you've got Dabo Swinney getting ambushed at about 5 o'clock going, wait a minute, what happened with Justin? How did that unfold?
So here's what happened. So I got a text message around 10:20 Sunday night that said, hey, what's this I'm hearing about Justin Ross transferring? And I'm like, what? Like, you know, so I started reaching out to my contacts. And then at the point, I just said, okay, so I went to Twitter. And then I go on Twitter and I start seeing it. So I'm like, okay, let's find the paper trail where it all began. And so it took me to a site that covers SEC recruiting, kind of transfer portal. And they all they tweeted was hearing that a major wide receiver could hit the transfer portal this week. That's all it said. Didn't say who, didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. That's all it said. It was a very general statement. And then all of a sudden, one person comes underneath that in that thread and just says, yeah, it's Justin Ross. He's leaving Clemson. And that's where it started.
So you need a laptop and some bandwidth, or maybe even just a cell phone, and you can have one of the top receivers in college football having to answer for his whereabouts.
Exactly. So, of course, the next morning I got up to see if it got – of course, if people put it on our board, and it was on other Clemson sites web boards as well. And so, you know, I just reached out to the folks at Clemson and said, hey, man, just want to give you a heads up. I don't believe this is true. Everything I'm hearing is saying it's not, obviously, but I wanted to just see what you could tell me. And so the folks at Clemson, they went ahead and basically just got Justin Ross to come out and say, it ain't true. And so that's how it all ended. Justin had to really basically just come out, and they told us, you know, that he wasn't coming. He wasn't through Clemson spokesperson told us that Justin Ross is staying in Clemson. He's not transferring and doesn't know how that even started.
All right. Well, as far as actual news, talk about his continued comeback from, I mean, spinal surgery last June, I believe it was. And so he's 11 months removed, and all the reports have been just uniformly superior to this point, at least.
Yes. Yeah, so we talked to Justin just before spring practice ended, like the week before. And he told us he got a good report when he spoke to the people in Pittsburgh in March. That's where he had the surgery. That's where his doctor is. Excuse me. And his doctor basically told him everything seems to be on schedule. He seems like he's going to be in position. And so they're going to do one more. He's going to go in person to talk to the doctor, and that'll be next month. And he's expecting when he does that he's going to get full clearance to play, which means also hitting. Now, so people understand, Justin got cleared last October to at least participate in some part of practice. Just he could do individual drills. He just couldn't do any live drills, which means any tackling or hitting or anything. So he's been doing that since October. He did that the entire spring. So it's not like he's going out there for the first time, but when he does go out for fall camp, it will be the first time that he's actually going to get tackled since last spring. Well, I guess it would have been last March.
I want to ask you about Dabo Swinney and his coaching tree, because one of those branches just won't leave, and that's Brent Venables. He's had some offensive coaches, though, head on, and I just want to cover some guys that have worked for Dabo, and specifically, again, on the offensive side, Chad Morris. What was the feel about Chad when he was there, and what was the feel about Chad as he was leaving?
Well, first of all, people at Clemson love Chad. He's really kind of the – he wasn't here when they won the national championships, but a lot of people think he laid the foundation for the success Clemson's had as far as from an offensive standpoint with his scheme and the way he did things. And he kind of passed that on to Tony Elliott. Now, Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott sort of did their own thing. They made it even better, if you will, kind of put their own flavor into it, especially from a play-calling standpoint with Tony. But, you know, the roots are definitely from Chad Morris. And so Chad, I remember when Chad started teaching Tony, he told me, this was back in 2011 or 12, that at the time he said Tony Elliott's the brightest young coach he's ever worked with and that one day this guy's going to be a head coach. And that was back in 2012, and we've seen the success Tony's had as a play caller, you know, since he took over for Chad Morris when Morris left after the end of the 2014 season. So the Clemson people actually are very fond of Chad Morris, and they really, you know, when they left, they knew he was going to, you know, try to be a head coach and go do bigger and better things. It didn't work out for him necessarily, but from a play caller standpoint, Chad Morris has been, you know, he's got that reputation as being one of the best. And, you know, and then he went back to, I guess now he's back in the high school ranks,
yeah,
and working for the biggest school there in Texas. So, you know, maybe this is Chad's way of trying to get back in college football as a head coach. I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to be back home. But I guess we're going to find out here in a few years or so, you know, what the story is with Chad on that.
What about Jeff Scott as he was on his way out of town as well? Again, they were co-coordinators, and as I understood, one was kind of responsible, Elliott for the play calling, Scott for maybe more of the bird's eye input, or do I have that reversed?
Yeah, no, you're sort of right on that. So basically, Tony called all the plays from up in the press box, and then Jeff was the guy on the field to kind of get a feel for where things are going, what the players are feeling like, what they're seeing, things of that nature, and he relayed that back to Tony on how they call plays. That was during the game, but during the week of the game, Jeff's a very organized person, a lot like Dabo Swinney, very organized, and I think so Jeff played more of that role as the guy who organized everything and got the game plan ready. Him and Tony worked exclusively, but I think the organizational part of it was all Jeff Scott, and that's where his strength is. And so those two worked great together, man. I mean, look what was the record, 70-4?
Yeah.
In the 4 or 5 years they were the co-offensive coordinators, and they just worked well together. You look at all the records they set, whether it be Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence at quarterback, or even Kelly Bryant at quarterback. They had a lot of success no matter who the quarterback was, and they could run the football with consistency, and they could throw the ball with consistency, and that's really what you're looking for. So Jeff, we always knew was going to be a head coach, right? And you know, he got that opportunity to go back home where his family's from, his mm-hmm. dad's from that Tampa area. And I think it was just too good of a situation for Jeff to turn down. It was a great place for him to get his start as a head coach. And I think he's going to be successful down there because Jeff recruits well, and he understands working under Dabo as long as he has, that you really don't want to just step on people's toes. You want your coaches to coach, and you sort of be the CEO and manage the program. I think that's why he's going to be successful.
Yeah, and you can win at South Florida. Absolutely you can. You can get players, and they've got some support down there. So I agree with you on what's possible down there. You know, funny thing, though, I remember back it's about 10 years ago, I was doing Conference USA games, and it's when Tommy West was still at Memphis. And I was talking to a buddy of mine from Clemson, and he was like, do you know how much Clemson people love Tommy West? I was like, really? He was like, don't get me wrong, we didn't want him to be the football coach anymore, but you won't find a Clemson fan that has a bad thing to say about Tommy West, Bowden, et cetera. Ken Hatfield maybe, but not Tommy West. And so it's the same sort of thing about Chad Morris, I guess. It's, you know, you ain't the coach here anymore, but we still love you.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. I was actually talking to somebody a few weeks back, and we were talking about that very same thing when it came to Tommy West and Hatfield, and it's like, man, Hatfield was run out of town, right? And he won. He was 32-13-1 and won a conference championship yep. during his time at Clemson. And he was run out of town and asked never to come back again, if you will. And Tommy West didn't do anything at Clemson. His last team went 3-8, which is the worst season till to this day they've had since 1976. And he was carried off the field on his players' shoulders after they beat South Carolina in his final game.
Good.
So that tells you all you need to know, right?
Good, good, dude. Last thing for you. What's the program want right now? Whether it's DRAD or Dabo Swinney, whomever, what's next? They don't need, you know, facilities. They don't need, you know, a bigger stadium. But what is on the – is it a $20 million scoreboard? I mean, what's next?
Well, it's funny you say that. Yes, the scoreboard is next. Clemson's going into – we talked to Dan Radakovich last week. And so Death Valley, even though they've done all these upgrades to the, you know, new players facility and things of that nature, Death Valley, though, needs a new upgrade. And so they're going to put in a brand-new scoreboard. They're also going to update the West Zone Club over there. And they're going to do some stuff with the east side of the stadium as well. So the scoreboard and stuff, I think, is going to be first on the docket, and that's going to be what they call phase one. They actually had a whole plan before COVID hit where they were going to tackle all these things in one big swoop, and it was going to be a $68 million deal. Now they're going to break it into phases because, you know, they got to save a little bit of money here and there. So the first thing on the docket is to get a brand-new scoreboard. So, yes, it'll be like a $26 million scoreboard put in here, I think, prior to the 2022 football season.
That is so funny, Will, because I literally was just trying to guess. I was thinking, what do I not see there? And I don't see, you know, something you can see from the space station, you know, in the end zone there. So I was just kind of guessing at that. I appreciate your time, man. It's always good info. Thank you.
All right, Chuck. Thanks so much for having me, man. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, Will Vandervoort again, the Clemson Insider. That just blows my mind. I literally was just guessing, and I've made, you know, not made fun, but I pointed it out. You know, my school spent $14 million on a TV, and it's a giant television. But I've also, and it's, boy, what a good picture. But I've also said that I've realized that at Jordan-Hare, a lot of people, thousands, like, I don't know, 70,000 maybe out of, you know, whoever's there, pay all that money, travel, sit outside to watch TV. So many folks not watching the field, you're watching the TV in the end zone. And Clemson, I mean, it would have to be in the north end zone where they run out of the, where they run down the hill. I was actually back there, and I'm trying to remember whether it was 05, 06, 07, at some point when they were finishing off, I guess, the south side of it. And so I guess that's where they would put it. But if Auburn's was $14 million, now that's been probably – that's still Jay Jacobs, so that's probably been 6-7 years, I'm going to guess. I'll account for inflation. But $26 million, it's going to be the size of the field. It's going to be like that what's that thing at Jerry World? Like, that goes all the way around, doesn't it?
Well, that's Atlanta's.
Oh, that's the Halo board. That's right. The Jerry is just the big giant one in the middle.
Yeah, it's just like the basketball-style board.
The gondola or so hanging down, except it's super-sized. That's right. At MBS, they've got that Halo board that goes the highlight. It just doesn't end, man. It's one giant, continuous, circular television screen. It's unbelievable. Jerry World, they've got the huge – it's like you used to have the scoreboard hanging down from the middle of the dome, except – it's huge. And I've actually got a buddy of mine, Carlos Medina, who used to produce the show. He's a Cowboys fan. He says he and his dad will go to Dallas for a game every year. He said, we buy a ticket, we sit in the stadium, we watch TV. He says, everybody at Dallas, and they have to tell people now when to cheer. All right, you cheer now because they have the ball on his 3rd and 8. He says it really changes things, but he says you also get a pretty good view no matter where you're sitting. So $26 million for a scoreboard. God bless you, Clemson. We're going to break, wrap up on a Wednesday next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I think because of the fact that he's had the injury, the bit of the unknown, the belief that maybe he's not as good as people thought, and you throw in the other guys that maybe have done a little bit more, that's the key to why I think people are kind of looking at it and say, you got two ACL surgeries you're dealing with that. Let's not forget about them.
Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com, talking about Zamir White. I thought he's had a couple of pretty good seasons in Athens, but as one person, this person who covers the team, this is my little text message poll end of last week. And somebody who covers the team says, yeah, he's a tough kid. Spent two years running into piles. A little brutal, but as far as the plant and cut, that's one of the last things that a running back's really going to do coming back from one ACL. And it was his senior year of high school up in North Carolina, and then he got in Athens, and I think it was a couple of weeks once he showed up on campus, he tore it a second time. So it's been a minute since he's been 100% healthy and really cutting it loose, and so maybe that's ahead for Zamir White. I hope it is, but I couldn't find anybody say Zamir White. I finally got one person, like I think it was maybe 9 or 10 text messages into it. Somebody said, well, it should be Zamir, but everybody's going to say Kendall Milton. I was like, that's exactly what's happening. So that was Chris Landry. Again, he's from LandryFootball.com, and he's with us every single Wednesday. So just tune in and also subscribe to the podcast. You don't have to do any other work ever. It just shows up and you listen to it whenever you want to. ThePodcastPark.com. It's a fine place to go. But anywhere you get your podcast, just hit subscribe, and you and I will talk every single day. And it'll be fun. Dan will be here in a minute, but right now I'm going to wrap it up with the closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments, presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
There is another takeaway from my discussion yesterday. I think I started the show with a discussion about playoff coaches and what happens to them afterwards. And I said, the reality is not much, that there have been 13 head coaches to coach teams in the playoffs. 7 of them are still at the school that they coached into the playoffs. Only one of them still coaches in college and is somewhere else. That's Jimbo. So what happens to them? Not much, really. They kind of stay where they are because teams don't let them get away. There is another takeaway, though, and it is much more local than anything to do with Ryan Day or Dabo or even Nick Saban. It's the annual pieces that we are going to see starting in July about somebody in the SEC West is going to pay its head coach $4.5 million to do what? To finish last. All you got to do is look at who the lowest paid head coach is in the SEC West. You realize that someone has to finish 7th out of 7th. And so at the very least, this person will make $4.5 million a year. Imagine if like a 5.5 or 6 million. See, at that point, you get to swap in somebody's specific. They paid $6 million to finish last. It's kind of easy just to make a, when you don't have to assign a school or a coach. And you will see those because lowest paid coach in the West, $4.5 million, which means somebody's paying $4.5 million to finish last. While it is an accurate statement, it's silliness. If you, and I'll use this as the example, but if you're in the SEC West, for instance, any division, any conference works, but especially this conference and that division, you can't take a pass on football. You can't choose to not emphasize football. You can't like, there are plenty of places. Basketball, we'll field a team, not really our priority. Baseball, swimming and diving, whatever. Track, oh, but football, yes. You can't take a pass on football. It's not even what Vanderbilt does, not blatantly at least, in the past. You have to try to compete. So, yeah, if State or Arkansas, I'll say it, if Auburn finishes last this season. They could. Absolutely, they could finish last in the West. There is no conclusion about overpaying your coach. And all this also shows me that the elite programs, when they get the hire right, then are able and more than eager to pay whatever to retain their coach. On the flip side of that, it's still true. Programs wanting to be elite, you're 100% correct to break off the current coach or to go out and get a new one if he really is the guy, at least by your thought. Lane Kiffin, he's your guy. Dan Mullen, he's your guy. If you think Mark Stoops is your guy, keep breaking him off. And I would look at Mark Stoops and the trajectory of that program, and I'm like, I think for Kentucky football, they've got their guy. Break him off, pay him whatever. If the elites do it, you should be doing it as well. That is my closing argument, brought to you by the law offices of Alexander, Shannara, and Associates. Wherever you are in the Deep South, if you need legal expertise, you need Alexander, Shannara, and Associates. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing awesome. And, you know, as we close out the show today, I'm thinking about two ACC programs, and I'm thinking about them in separate categories. One of them that I shouldn't think about them in, and the other one that I should think about them in, but they're not. And the one that I'm thinking about that I shouldn't be thinking about is Florida State. And we talked about them yesterday about the job that Mike Norvell is doing in terms of adding graduate transfers left and right. It is basically any player in the transfer portal looking at them, meaningful playing experience, give them a deal, bring them to Tallahassee. They are part of this. I just saw a note, by the way, that Florida State has more than 10,000 snaps of player experience that is going to be coming to their football team via the transfer portal. That's impressive. That's huge. The one that I should be thinking about, and I'm not thinking about them as highly, is Georgia Tech. And there's reason to feel that way, because you talked about the SEC odds from BetOnline earlier. Chuck, you tell me if Georgia Tech should ever be a 50-1 shot to win the ACC. Should they ever be a 50-1 shot?
No. If you're a Power 5 program, and I don't care, like traditionally Wake Forest, and they're pretty good now. Vanderbilt traditionally, they're hoping to get whatever. If you're a Power 5 program, 50-1 to win your conference, I know what's baked into it. You got a monster up top as well, but no, you should never be that long.
You are bottom seven of the conference in a conference that has an awful and a winnable division, mind you, even though you've got North Carolina and Miami in said division. But here's where it leads to now is, I get it, pandemic last year, no spring practice, all those different types of things. Jeff Collins really needs to tread lightly this year with his fan base, because he needs to kind of pick and choose his spots with the 404, the culture, and downtown Atlanta, and the largest turnaround of an offense in college football history, all these different types of things. Because I got to tell you, he hangs a 4-8, he hangs a 3-9. If he even hangs a 5-7 this year as a record, you're going to have the people who do care deeply about Georgia Tech football start to wonder, is the greeting cards and the T-shirts really working for us? Because I got to tell you, the results aren't.
Appreciate it, Dan. And you're right about the acceleration of the expectations. The slogans and the momentum behind recruiting and the feel-good about stuff that isn't actually on the field, that's got a shelf life. That's got a sell-by date. And I think it's September 4th. So I agree with you on that. Good coach, good guy. Got to win now. All right, wraps it up on a Wednesday, folks. I promise, though, 22 hours from right now, I'll be back. We're talking college football right here on The Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.